There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Prenuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Prenuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we've got a bonus episode for you here of the podcast with two amazing guests. Very excited to welcome them to talk about their new book, Penny and the Eddie, which is coming out from Paper Cuts on April 21st. Depending on when we post this, FOC is March 30th. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Jimmy Gasparo and Amber Aiken. Jimmy and Amber, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. So excited to have you on. So excited to talk about this book. This book, we got a chance to look through it. It is absolutely adorable, delightful, and heartfelt, and sweet, and beautifully drawn. All of those good things. But to lay it out there in the broadest possible sense, and then you fill in whatever many, many details I'm going to leave out. It is about a girl named Penny who is having a little trouble with her family. Her parents are having a bit of a rough time of it. Her sister is trying to help, but her older sister has her own stuff going on. And she ultimately either imagines or befriends this Yeti that helps her through this troubling time. Again, broadest possible pitch out there. What do you want to fill in about the book? What did I miss?
No, I mean, that's like the broad strokes of it. So Penny is a young kid. She lives with her family, her mom and dad, and her older sister, and her parents, Fenton and Maxine, argue a lot. And it's very, Penny is very kind of sensitive to it. Her older sister, Perry, is a bit checked out. And yeah, one day a drawing that her sister gives her, because her sister's kind of obsessed with cryptids, and gives her a drawing of a Yeti that means a lot to Penny. And that Yeti kind of walks right off the page into the family's life. And Penny, of course, immediately thinks the Yeti is there to help her get her parents to stop fighting. I think we're all adults on the podcast. Justin looks a little young.
Yeah. I am the youngest on this podcast. So thank you.
Adults, we know that doesn't really, it's not how it works. You know, kids aren't responsible for their parents' relationship. So maybe it doesn't work out quite the way Penny wants it to, but so there's a lot about the family dynamic. There's a lot about the friendship between Penny and Yeti. And there's a lot of fun, imaginative, big adventures, but you know, there's also at its core, a story about what it's like growing up with that kind of stress and tension as a kid in the house when mom and dad are kind of going at it quite a bit.
I was just going to ask real quick, Jimmy, you have a daughter named Penny, and you are a comic book Yeti online, and you host a podcast called Cryptid Creator Corner. So this is autobiographical, this whole graphic novel.
it's not autobiographical.
Really?
Oh, okay. Not really.
From the Yeti's perspective. But you're a Yeti.
Yeah.
The thing is that this was it started as a 4-page short that my daughter Penny and I came up with. We were just like telling stories 4 years ago. We were coming up with a story idea, and I thought it would be great to show her how a comic is made, like from the idea of a story to a comic. And so we did this 4-page short. A good chunk of it is actually in the book. And we called it Yeti and the Big Stomp. I was lucky enough to find Amber through another artist that I had worked with, Beck Kubrick. And I thought, oh, as soon as I saw Amber's portfolio, I'm like, perfect. This is going to look great. It's going to be cute. And it's about Penny and Yeti go to a diner. They don't have what Yeti wants. Yeti gets really upset, kind of cracks the diner by stomping, hence the big stomp. And then Penny goes and talks to the Yeti about, hey, it's all right to have these big feelings, but maybe we got to find a better way to channel it. And I just thought it was a really cute, fun 4-page short that Penny helped me with. And then when Mad Cave had open submissions, I was like, oh, I really want to pitch something. Do I have any like art that I could adapt? And I said, oh, I have Yeti and the Big Stomp. Like, could I take that 4-page short and expand it into a bigger story? And really, it was just to kind of force me to, you know, take another step in, you know, trying to write more and pitch something. And so I reached back out to Amber. It had been like maybe a year since we had done the 4-page short. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to pitch this to Mad Cave. Like, is that okay with you? Like, I'm going to pitch it as a graphic novel. Here's the outline that I've come up with about this family. And she's like, yeah, great. And yeah, 2 years later, now we have this graphic novel coming out. And that's why, you know, everyone's like, so are you like obsessed with Yetis? And I'm like, if I had planned this out better, it has just all kind of, you know, because when I was putting Penny to bed and we came up with a story idea back in like the summer of 2022, we were talking about telling a story and she goes, well, it has to have a Yeti in it because my kids know that I do stuff with comic book Yeti. I have a T-shirt. I mean, I have a couple T-shirts that have comic book Yeti on it. And she said, we had to do a story about a Yeti. And I said, all right, well, you have to be in the story too. And then that, you know, that's why we've, and now we're, and now we're here. it's wow. Like with all these Yeti connections and everything. And yeah. And cryptids and the Cryptid Creator Corner. Amber and I just kind of like had this idea and then kind of fell into all of this. I would have planned it out better. So it seemed like I'm not just like writing about my family, because several people who have read the book are very concerned.
They're like, are you okay? Well, but just on that, Amber, for you, like the way you capture sort of these, the kid's point of view and the bright world that Penny's living in, but at the same time showing these sort of like really upsetting everyday arguments that this family's getting in. Like, can you talk about that? That feels hard to me to capture that sort of the stress of that while it's still keeping it in the kid's world.
Yeah, it was definitely a very delicate balance between like making the emotional beats emotional enough and uncomfortable when it needs to be uncomfortable, but not scary and still like approachable and appropriate for like a younger audience. I definitely took inspiration from many illustrators who came before me who also tackled like difficult stories.
Well, what about the Yeti then? Because the Yeti is sort of the opposite end of the spectrum. It's just like, it's like cotton candy come to life is essentially the way that I kept thinking about it. So how much?
Perfect.
That's a really good explanation of the Yeti.
What was the inspiration behind the design of that? And how much back and forth was there until you feel like you came up with the perfect Yeti?
Honestly, Jimmy gave me a lot of free rein to draw the Yeti how I felt like the Yeti would look. I wanted the Yeti to read as Yeti. I didn't want it to, you know, read as any other sort of magical creature. I wanted it to be clear that he was a Yeti, but I also wanted to put like a spin on it to make him stand out from like, you know, every other Yeti that had been drawn. I was really influenced by Sully from Monsters, Inc.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Now
that
It like made sense with like the role he fills in the story and like Sully and Monsters, Inc. Plus I was obsessed with Sully as a kid. So like it felt very full circle for me to then like draw a character who fills like the same kind of niche. But yeah. And I love drawing cute things. It's hard for me to draw things that aren't cute.
Well, that's what could be my question, because like the cuteness factor on the Yeti is through the roof. I was wondering if that's your kind of like natural tone, or did you lean into it because You know, I've told Yetis to hit the road and they couldn't live with my family. But if a Yeti was that cute, I don't know if I could say no.
Honestly, it's for a long time I tried to like lean out of the cuteness. And then at some point I was like, I've been drawing cute stuff since I was in like first grade. I think it's just like in my genes. So at some point I was like, I have to embrace this, because even when I tried to draw like scary things or like serious things, it was still like a little adorable.
That's fun.
Jimmy, for you, like, it's, I was struck reading this about, like, it felt like very much like a COVID, a slight response to COVID of a family being with each other all the time. And having those like parents who are like, I'll be with you in 10 minutes. I swear, 10 minutes. I just have to do this work. That felt very real to me. Maybe that's my lived experience.
Yeah, it seems like you're bringing stuff to
could
the
be.
Story.
I mean, I'm seeing myself a little bit in here. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I feel like, what made you want to go so hard? Like, this idea was something like pretty whimsical when you were describing the big stomp, to go into like a much more real issue that families are dealing with.
Well, when we just had the 4-page short and it was about Penny and Yeti's friendship, and I certainly could have, I thought early on when I was going to like, how do I take this 4 pages and develop like a full graphic novel, and thought, well, is it just about a Penny and Yeti? Is it just about their friendship? Is it about kids now and about kindness and empathy? And I think that's certainly a part of the book, but, there was a real life kind of moment where my wife and I had been arguing about something, and where my Penny like did say, I overheard her telling my mother at the time, who had come over. We don't need to get into the dynamics of like my wife and my mom, but
that's for the sequel book.
That's for the sequel. Yes. I did overhear Penny say something to my mom. Like, she was just like, I really don't like when they do this. And mm-hmm. wasn't anything she did wrong. It's not like we were yelling at her or disciplining her or anything along those lines. It was just one of those like stupid arguments that Fenton and Maxine, that couples get into about literally, you know, stuff that shouldn't be that big a deal. And just because you are spending so much time together, or because you've been in a relationship for 10, 15, 20 years. It really struck me and stayed with me. And I'm like, could I tell a story about a family who is maybe struggling a little bit, or the parents are kind of in a bit of a gridlock and don't realize the effect it's having on the kids? And then I realized, well, it's certainly something I've seen to some degree in my house. It's certainly something I've seen with a lot of my friends and their kids having to hear whether or not the parents are together or separated or divorced or right. co-parenting or whatever it might be. And I've seen a lot of stuff where the parents are getting a divorce, and it's about how the kids navigate that. But I didn't think I'd ever seen anything where we just deal with, you know, we don't talk about whether or not Fenton and Maxine are going to stay together or get divorced. Yeah. It's really about what it's like growing up in that house when there's this like constant tension and stress, like not even again with you, like just between your parents, and what right. that does and how a kid responds to that. And so I thought, well, maybe there's something there. And I started to outline that, and I kind of, built the story around Yeti and the big stomp, and then just built it out from there. And then from there, it just made sense that like a couple of things that were important to me. I wanted the family to feel realistic. I wanted to establish them first, and didn't want Yeti to show up until like the end of the first section, so that we get to live with the family for a little bit. And then knowing that, I knew that, you know, because Amber had already done the Yeti and the Big Stomp, like there was nobody else that I would want to do this with, which why when I asked her if she was okay with me pitching it, I was so glad she said yes, because I think because her style is so cute and magical and whimsical, when Yeti and Penny do have their big fun adventures, I think it works so much better because of that juxtaposition between like the realistic family and her artwork. I don't know if I answered your question. I hope
no,
I did.
No, you really did. And I want to give you guys a compliment back on it, because I feel like we read a lot of books that are like perfect for families to read together, co-reading. This feels like there's so much for both kids and parents to pull away from this. It feels like that. I haven't read anything that feels truly like a co-reading experience where both parents and kids can walk away being like, oh, I've learned something about each side here. I feel seen in this book. It was really, really great.
I don't want to contradict you or anything, Justin, but I'm actually rereading The Shining right now by Stephen King, and it's actually very similar. It's also a family that's going through a tough time. There's some magic creatures they encounter. They really learn a lesson, I think, by the end of the book.
No yetis in that, though. It does take place in
a lot of snow.
Wintertime. Yeah, a lot of snow. Yeah,
no, there could be a yeti in that.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm only halfway through the book. We'll see how it turns out.
Oh, okay. Well, spoiler alert, but there are some things that end up frozen.
Oh, okay. There we go. Okay, it's basically the same thing. You should start shelling it as like The Shining, but for kids.
I think Yeti 2, The Shining could be the next book for sure. One thing I wanted to circle back to, Jimmy, that you were talking about is Amber's the vibe, the brightness. It's just such a kind of like welcoming, great, you know, I didn't want to leave it. It was just such a fun world that she created. And you talked a little bit about like, you know, the difference between like their adventure and kind of real life and stuff. Can you share a little bit about your back and forth about that and like how you kind of settled on those differences?
I mean, I will just say for my part, like I left a lot of that stuff, you know, up to Amber. In terms of the graphic novel, I had already seen what she did with the 4-page short. I mean, I loved her art style. I love the colors of it.
So you weren't like, hey, can you turn this cuteness up or this cuteness down or anything like that?
I mean, not really. From my perspective, I trusted Amber. If anything in the script, in terms of how to do certain things, like rather than like normally I was when I first started like trying to write comics 6 years ago, I was very concerned about doing things like the quote unquote, like right way. Like it's gotta be like this in the script and it's gotta be like that. And I was like, you don't know what you're doing. You're a lawyer. Stop being silly. Just like be vulnerable. So I would just, you know, I would say page one, you know, panel one, this is what I'm thinking. If you have a better idea, let's hear it. Maybe something like this. And we just did a shared Google Doc was the script. And Amber would jump in and she's like, I can't wait to draw this. What about this? What about that? And it was like every page that I got, especially with the colors, but, you know, because Amber did so much with the colors that reflected the mood and the tone of the book. And then when things were getting serious, she would just drop it out to white, you know, it would go from blue to yellow to white. So I was, I was blown away. But Amber, go ahead. If you want to talk about like your approach, that's just from my perspective. I was very spoiled. So
Jimmy gave me a super fun script to work with, where it was like everything I needed to be able to like block out a shot and like imagine it in my head when I was doing my first read through, and then gave me a lot of freedom to fill in the blanks and add like what felt like little Easter eggs to myself of like just things that I like to draw and I thought would be really sweet. And you know, Jimmy's like my number one cheerleader. So every time I would hand in pages, I'd be so scared. Like, oh my gosh, like I hope I'm doing like the story justice. I hope this is like what Jimmy's imagining. And then it was like nothing but like, great job. This is like awesome. We love it. Which That's was great. Wonderful.
I am curious. I remember this happening, but I don't remember the specifics. The Mad Cave talent search. What was involved there? Was it just kind of sending them a pitch and then they're like, congratulations, you got it? Or were there more stages? How did it work?
I first started writing comics that was the first thing I ever did to the talent search. I didn't win the Mad Cave talent search. Oh, I just entered it. Yeah. But we pitched this just to Mad Cave's open submissions and Paper Cuts picked it up. But that's what got me into comics. I was reading a lot of comics and posting about them online. And it was even right before I started working with Comic Book Yeti. That I started with them in January of 2021. But in 2020, you know, the pandemic, and I was missed having something creative in my life. But Man Cave had their talent search, and it's basically like they've done it differently for different years. 2020, I think there was a couple of different, you could pick one of their books and just do a 10-page story and submit it. And I thought, well, there's like no bar to entry, right? Yeah. I don't have to pay $50 or anything. I just got to go to the library and get Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics and look through a couple of my graphic novels and, you know, see somebody, you know, can I find a Tom King script in the back of a Mr. Miracle and like just see how I format it. So that's what started me on my journey. I submitted to the talent search and I didn't win, but I really enjoyed the process of doing it. And so then I just started pitching to anthologies. And in the past 6 years, I've been published a couple of times. I did win the Summit Comics. If anyone has heard of Summit Comics, they're a new mm-hmm. Superhero universe. I won their talent search. So I'm going to have a 2-page short with Pete Collins in their upcoming Pinnacle number one. And but yeah, this is my first and Amber's first, our first mm-hmm. debut, you know, graphic novel.
That's awesome. To go out together like that, that's great.
Cool. Well, given that we're not quite on the eve as we're taping this, we're like a month away from the release. How is that feeling? Is there a nervous anticipation, excitement, a mix of both? Where are you at?
It's both for me. I'm like both so terrified. Every time I talk about it, since you know, I haven't held the physical book in my hands yet, I kind of feel like I'm lying to people. And I'm like, yeah, I've got like a book coming out. I promise it's real. You guys will see it. But it's very exciting. I think people in my life are even more excited than me, which is wonderful. Awesome. But yeah.
Are you going to go, go to the shops and just happen to walk by as people are picking it up?
This looks great.
Yeah. Oh, I'm planning on it.
I'm definitely doing that. I'm excited because with daughter Penny, she's in the third grade, and I had reached out to her teacher because Penny was telling them. So I'm actually going in at some point in May to both of the third grade classes at her school about making comics. So it's like the first time I've ever done anything like that. Trying to get the young kids hooked. So I'm excited about doing that.
You haven't shown off any legal briefs in the past when you got in the class?
I've not done that with the young kids. It is funny. I have a friend who is a high school teacher and teaches business law. And like for the past few years, he would have me come into his class and talk about being a lawyer. And I'm like, out of my friends that I still keep in touch with from law school, they call me like the real lawyer because they all have what my mother would refer to as like a big job, you know, like a corporate job. And I'm I'm a plaintiff's attorney, so I do litigation. But I do like talking to the high school kids about being a lawyer because like it's funny the questions that they'll ask, like which TV shows are real, like is it. Like, do you think it was terrible what happened to Meek Mills when he was going through some trouble in Philly?
Wow.
And inevitably somebody always asked me, like, how much do you make? Which I think is just a great question off the bat. Yeah.
Well, now you can go in and just drop your comic, your graphic novel out of your briefcase and be like, oh, what's this?
Hey. Anybody guys like reading?
Yeah. No! How much does Meek Mills make?
I know it's a little early for this, but given that you have completed the book and it is coming out, are you starting to think ahead to a next one, or is it too early for that at this point?
I mean, we haven't heard anything, you know, but I'm hoping it does well. I've outlined a two already, if they want one. I haven't shown it to Amber yet. I'm still kind of like tweaking it, but I have an outline for a book too, if anybody wants it. So
I would love to draw it.
I would enjoy the first one.
We're on board.
Yeah, definitely.
There was actually, I should mention, a sequel to The Shining. I haven't read that one yet. It's called Dr. Sleep. So if you want to look for any inspiration there, I don't know. Just throw it.
And that was pretty universally loved, if I remember correctly.
I love that one. but
I think it's actually a lot better than people give it credit for.
Okay. I think we have something here. I think we have something. Jimmy, Amber, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Congrats on the book. Again, for anybody listening, it's coming out April 21st from Paper Cuts. It's called Penny and the Yeti. And as long as I get my act together and post it early enough, final order cutoff is March 30th. So tell your comic book shop you want Penny and the Yeti. Again, Jimmy, Amber, thank you so much for coming on.
Great book. Thank you for letting us read it.
Love what you guys do. Thank you so much for having us on the podcast. I really appreciate it. As somebody else who like has a podcast and is in like indie comics and comics, I know how tough it can be, and I really appreciate it. And thanks for taking the time.
Oh yeah.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.